only on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Glenn Beck, weekdays, noon to 3.
Christmas party hop. Mistletoe home where you can see.
And whenever I hear the song, I think of Home Alone movie. Back we are, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. I'm still stunned by this story. You have Edward Snowden, who, far from the initial media reports that his conscience was troubled at what he had witnessed at the NSA, so he finally had no choice but to leave the agency suddenly and publicize some of what they were doing with the metadata mining of phone records. And then he leaves the country because he's worried about retaliation. Well, it turns out that he was trying to work his way into areas so he could get at this information in the first place. And he fled the country. He was willing to go just about anywhere. He's currently living in Russia. And now they're thinking of giving him amnesty to return. I asked my old friend Peter Brooks from the Heritage Foundation, military policy expert, to join me for a few minutes. Can you believe this, Peter?
Come on, it's the season of forgiving. You know,
yeah, that's right.
No, yeah, it is pretty interesting. Now, you have to remember that this was said in a television interview by an individual who is leading a task force on the Snowden case.
Yeah, but he's also probably very high up, Richard Ledgett.
Yes, but his boss, General Alexander, said, I don't think that's happening. I don't think either one of them are lawyers necessarily. So this is a whole another issue. It seems to be the State Department is kind of moonwalking away from those comments. I'm not a lawyer either. And I just can't see it because I think, so much information has gotten out already. Anything he may have in his possession has probably been compromised to the Chinese or the Russians. So I don't think there's anything left to give him any sort of amnesty I don't see anything left to get back for any sort of deal, just from a common sense standpoint.
All right. Did you see the 60 Minutes report on him last night?
No, I didn't see the show last night.
Of course, you were probably aware of what was divulged last night already.
Yeah.
But he's facing very serious criminal charges.
Sure.
When
That's
he returns to this country, personally believe he's a traitor. So why they'd even consider giving him amnesty? And you have General Michael Hayden, who used to be the CIA director, saying, for crying out loud, this simply motivates future Snowdens.
Yeah. I mean, that sort of comment just doesn't make any sense to me. And I think the individual who made it is probably going to be regretting it. Now and saying, gosh, I wish I hadn't said that. I mean, just from a common sense perspective, it makes no sense. I mean, I don't know if many people caught this. I wrote about this in the Boston Herald last week talking about the terror threat. But 2 weeks ago, the chairmen of the intelligence committees were on television and they said the terrorist threat is up, more than 1 or 2 years ago. And one of the things that Mike Rogers, the House intelligence chairman, said is that they've lost communications on some of these terror organizations because of some of the stuff, or he implied that some of the stuff that Snowden had leaked. This has had a significant effect on our national security, not to mention our diplomacy. Think about, the Brazilian president canceled a visit to the United States. Others have decided not to do things with the United States because of these revelations. This is a huge deal.
He has clearly impacted American foreign policy.
Absolutely.
More than any other civil servant in this nation. And not for
he was a contractor. He wasn't even a civil servant, really. I mean, he was a contractor.
You're right. He was a contractor.
At the time, he's working for the government.
Yes. So
I was shocked. I'd been a contractor times in my career. I'd actually worked in the defense industry, and I was shocked at the information that he had access to. I was just shocked.
Did you hear they figured when he first began to cheat the system? And do you know what his first instance of cheating was?
No.
The exam to get the job. Literally from day one.
Yeah.
Before day one. So he could get to day one, he was cheating.
Right. Well, when you give somebody a clearance, I mean, that's a subjective call, all right? You know, they're doing an investigation on an individual, they interview them, they talk to them, and then they make a decision whether this person is trustworthy. Now, that's subjective to human frailties or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But the problem is that he was able to get in the system, which you can understand because people make mistakes along these lines, but then when he was in the system, the access to the information he got, I just can't believe. I mean, it's at the highest levels of the U.S. government intelligence.
So here's the other thing I wanted to ask you about. This little melodrama going on in North Korea, where Kim Jong-un ends up basically putting a hit out on his own uncle, who had apparently been a mentor and a trusted advisor to him and was seen as one of the most powerful people in North Korea. He not only has him taken down, but he does it in the most public way possible.
Yeah.
And so I'm saying to myself, do we have a little maniac here on our hands?
No, I think what he's saying, I mean, look, I've been to North Korea, actually, but I don't know this leader. My sense is look, you know, I think, you know, this guy's as crazy as a fox, just like most North Korean leaders. And I think the message here is that I'm in charge. You know, I don't need Uncle Jang anymore. Jang was the brother-in-law of father, Kim Jong-il.
Yeah, but I understand that. I understand. I don't need the forced retirement, even exile, you know, and quote accident or something. But
that's not how the North Koreans do it.
Why? So, but I've never been aware of them doing this.
Oh no, they do this publicly to a family member. Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know the history of the execution of family members, but I mean, this is a brutal regime. You know, they have political prison camps where people are sent to basically die. They execute people there. Their people are starving because of their economic policies. They're spending money on their nuclear program instead of feeding their people. I mean, this is a brutal thing, but it sends a very strong signal. It says, look, you know, it's been 2 years since my father died. Yeah, I needed training wheels for a couple of years, but I don't need these training wheels anymore. And Uncle Jang is dispensable, and I'm in charge. That's the message here. I'm in charge, and I'm not afraid, and don't mess with me because this is what I'll do to you if you try to. If you're thinking about a coup, and but this is not the only person. This is the most public one, but he's purged a whole number of civilians and military officers over the last 2 years because he's worried about threats to his rule.
That's when I look at someone like this, usually I don't get, you know, I don't think twice about it, but then I think, oh yeah, they've got nukes.
Oh yeah. Could he do something stupid and start another Korean War? Absolutely. I mean, that's what you have to worry about here. And, you know, the problem here in our own diplomacy is that the most senior American to have met with him is Dennis Rodman.
Think about it. Basketball flake. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and he's met him twice. I mean, nobody else has met with this person. So they're trying to take a measure of him. North Korea, he was out of the public eye for a couple of weeks. They're just talking about today how he's shown up after a couple of weeks. I mean, this is like the old days, you know, trying to figure out what they're doing in the Kremlin. You know, reading the tea leaves.
Yeah.
You know, trying to read between the lines. I mean, this is a very difficult place to figure out, and they have nukes. They have a very large army.
Okay, figure this one out for me.
All right.
There's an 85-year-old man who apparently is in good physical and mental health, and he's toured the world, and he wanted to see North Korea before he died because he had served in the Korean War.
Right.
And so after a very uneventful trip, he's getting on the plane to head home. I think he's with a couple family members. And Korean military come on the plane and they hustle him off and hold him prisoner.
Yeah.
And make him read a statement. What's that all about?
Well, he served in the U.S. Army in Korea.
That was 60 years ago.
And I absolutely agree with you. There is a risk in going to North Korea. There's almost, on a regular basis, there's some sort of American...
I mean, he wasn't, you know, calling in bombing strikes. He wasn't a naval commander. Anything? He was just a soldier.
I think there was more to his. He was involved with a unit. I don't know the whole story. What I read in the press is he was involved with a unique sort of unit that was doing some very interesting sort of work over there. And people may want to check that out. And I can't because I was curious as to why they held him. But they held him because, you know, for this reason. I mean, this is what they do. I mean, they have the the USS Pueblo on display over there. You know, as you
that
know,
was the,
they,
that was the U.S. ship
US
they
spy
seized
ship.
In 1968.
that 1968. I mean, this is what these people do, and this probably even played up in the North Korean press, that we have an American here. They play up, John, they play on fear. They play on fear. They tell the Korean people that you live with privation, you live with deprivation, because those Americans will come north again and try to conquer us. So this, they use these people as, you know, opportunities to send not only a signal to the United States, don't mess with us, but also they're used for domestic consumption as well. I mean, they're going to say, look, we got this guy who fought against us during the great patriotic struggle against against the United States and the other imperialist running dogs.
Yes.
You know, some of the most interesting stuff is to read the English translation of the stuff that they write about, for instance, about Jong. They called him human scum. I mean, think about it.
Oh, you mean his
some
uncle?
It,
yeah.
Yeah, his uncle. Some of it. Uncle Jong was human scum. You know, I mean, some of this is really interesting, but it's also, at the same time it's interesting, it's also very, very dangerous.
Okay, last thing I have to ask, there is another American who's being held there. He's a minister from this area, Linwood area here in Snohomish County, named Kenneth Bai.
Right.
What would you do to get him out? Because apparently he's not doing so well.
Well, it's very important. They should obviously, we don't have diplomatic relations with North Korea. We go through the Swedes in North Korea. There are opportunities to meet with them at the United Nations and other places where North Korea has embassies. I think you have to, appeal to them on humanitarian basis. This has happened many, many times before. It's a tragedy for the individual. It's a tragedy for their families, and it's a tragedy for U.S. North Korean relations. So I think diplomacy is the only, quiet diplomacy. Maybe you could send, I wouldn't send Bill Clinton like they've done in the past, because it adds legitimacy to the regime, and they may be holding him for just that reason. They want somebody at a very, very senior level to come and provide legitimacy to the regime, President Clinton did a couple of years ago. I don't think that was the right way to go. But there are other people who could do this. Bill Richardson could do it, the former governor of New Mexico.
He's always available for hire.
Jackson. I mean, one of those sort of things. But mm-hmm. I mean, you have to be cautious here, because what they're looking at is for a propaganda opportunity of propaganda as well. But the important thing is obviously to get this individual home safe and sound as soon as possible.
Peter, it's always great talking. Thanks very much for joining
me. Thanks for your time.
You got
Thank
it. That's
John.
Peter.
Happy holidays.
Peter Brooks from the Heritage Foundation. Happy holidays to you, Peter. When we come back, what is the difference between Robinson Cano moving to Seattle as opposed to staying in New York? Wait until you hear the difference in dollars and cents. All other things being equal between coming here versus being there. Also, we know a lot more now about the politics of the 18-year-old Arapaho High School student who shot a classmate before taking his own life. I wonder why the media are not telling us more about his politics. Well, I'm not wondering, but you're not being told, so I'm going to tell you. It's all coming up here on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI.